The OTB Brief. Everything you need to know about sport every morning. Need to get on top of the day's sports news? Well, the OTB Brief is the only sports update you'll need every morning. With all the breaking stories, post-match reaction.
I always look about, you know, teams who've won a league, their mindsets, their body language, their hunger, desire. And I see that so much in this Liverpool team.
And the best bits from off the ball, all in a 10-minute podcast.
Rory McIlroy's game has changed a lot.
The OTB Brief. Weekday mornings from 7:20 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're welcome along. So busy show this evening. Disappointment in the end for the Irish team against Germany. There will be no European Championships in 2022 for Vera Pauw's side. We'll hear from the Irish manager and from Kathleen McNamee of ESPN, who has been watching the game. Just finished in Tala in the last 15 minutes or so. 3-1 win for Germany. Kevin Doyle is on this evening, retired on advice of a neurologist back in 2017. He talks to us about the ongoing issue of brain injury, concussion in football, which is very much a live topic at the moment. And between 9 and 10, a really good chat coming your way. We'll hear from Gabriel Clark. If you don't quite recognise the name, you will most certainly recognise the voice. Gabriel Clark of ITV. And he is very much behind the new Jack Charlton documentary, which I know a lot of people are interested in seeing. I have seen it. It's very good, very poignant, more than anything. And we'll talk to Gabriel Clark about that between 9 and 10. 53106 is the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Is also a Champions League evening. Liverpool play Ajax. Kevin Keller is starting in that game. Alisson is out with a thigh injury. So we'll be right across the live football as well this evening. Richie McCormick, good evening to you.
Congratulations, Joe. Your covering of that Champions League match tonight means that Alisson Becker has picked up that thigh injury. Well done. I hope you're happy.
Oh, I see what you did there. For a second, I was like, what? Me?
Yes, Joe. You.
Yeah. So Kevin Keller starts, 22 years of age. This is good. This is big news at Anfield against Ajax. So we'll be keeping a close eye on how he does. And Will O'Callaghan, good evening to you.
Evening, Joe. How are things?
Yeah, very well. I know you watched a bit of Ireland 1, Germany 3. It was a decent effort, but honestly, you probably felt Germany were always going to win the game.
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, the damage done for the Republic of Ireland before tonight with the drop points in Greece with the late equaliser that they conceded and that 1-0 defeat in the last international window away to Ukraine, which left everything in Ukraine's own hands going into the last night of fixtures. And they got the result late on against Montenegro, winning by 2-1. And for the Republic of Ireland, it was just a case of sticking in the game with the team who were ranked second in the world. And for the best part, I thought the Republic of Ireland played quite well. They deployed a low block, which only really became an issue in one or two occasions when Vasmuth, who I thought was the best player on the pitch, scored the goal midway through the first half with a long-range shot when Grace Maloney, who had a good first competitive start for Ireland between the sticks, was a little bit onside. She hit the crossbar then in the second half and wrapped it up with a goal late on. But aside from that, I thought Ireland made it very difficult for Germany to play. Their very impressive strike force didn't get too many chances during the game. Ireland got a lifeline just before halftime with Katie McCabe's penalty, which she was extremely brave to put that high after hitting the crossbar in Ukraine. But she never really got the impression in the second half that Ireland were going to score. Even when Amber Barrett came on and added a little bit of an extra target up front, Ireland created precious little. I think the deflected shot that Denise O'Sullivan had was the only other meaningful shot on target that Ireland were able to produce in the second 45 minutes. But you would have to say a pretty credible performance against a Germany team who, we have to remember, conceded just the one goal, that Katie McCabe penalty, in the entire qualification campaign. And they were able to sweep Ukraine 8-0 home and away. So we'd have to be happy enough that we put in a credible performance in Essen against Germany and also tonight at Tala Stadium.
Yeah, really damage was done against Ukraine and Greece away. And I was watching the TV coverage there, you know, Stephanie Roach is saying, yeah, look, we can sit here and say this is great and we did okay against Germany. But really, we're probably a better team than the Ukraine. And we messed up, we mucked up badly against them away, like the own goal was terrible and Ireland beat them at home and then Greece away conceding a last minute equaliser. Stephanie Roach was saying, you know, I'm sick of listening to people saying for the last 12 years or so we're improving and we're getting closer. And that's all true. But like at a certain point, there's something wrong with the team when they can't get over the line. Now, I don't mean tonight, obviously, against a brilliant Germany side. But if you're to look at this table, and even accepting that things have improved under Vera Pauw, which they have,
the Irish team would probably chalk that up as an unbelievable chance missed, Richie.
Yeah, it's that's the thing. And that's the prism that that's going to be viewed through. It's not going to be viewed through tonight's 3-1 loss to Germany. It's going to be viewed through those results away to Greece and away to Ukraine. But again, it's a difficult thing to balance because, like, obviously there is going to be disappointment and it does look like a huge opportunity missed. But they now know that the likes of Ukraine and the likes of Greece are sides that they should be beating. And that's the level that they've wanted to move above from for the last while, and to look like they can beat these sides. And it showed in the home matches that they can. And for the guts of that game over in Ukraine as well, it looked like Ireland deserved all 3 points in that match. To come away from it with none was a real kick in the teeth. But yeah, it's a difficult one to manage because there is a sense that they've actually performed pretty well during the course of these 8 games in the group. But ultimately, it's not enough. I think, and we've had conversations with her on the show recently about whether or not she's staying. I think it's absolutely crucial that the FAI make every play they can to get Vera Pauw to stay on in that job, because the progress is there to be seen. I mean, and there are young players coming through, and the graduation from the Women's National League, as good a level as it is at the moment and better than it has been in recent years, there is a progression for players going across to England, and we've seen even in Louise Quinn's case going off to Italy too. We do have a decent group of players. We do have a decent core group of players. Some are going to step away now, that's for sure. But there are some younger players like Ella Molloy coming through, just 16 years of age, who already looks like a promising player at international level. It's a matter of informing everybody that this is okay, that we can move on from this point, and that qualification for the next thing is around the corner, because I've seen enough during the course of this qualification campaign to suggest that it is, and there is enough faith to be had in this team.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. There's a text in, by the way, saying, with Quevin Kelleher starting for Liverpool this evening, it's only right that the worst pronunciation of his name will be immortalised by OGB in some way. It sounds like a montage made in heaven for you, Richie. Pete and Mayo wants it.
Oh.
Imagine around Europe this evening, in living rooms across the continent and beyond, the pronunciations of Quevin Kelleher coming people's ways.
Well, the ideal thing is we actually don't hear his name all that much. That's the one thing that we don't want to hear tonight is Quevin Kelleher's name being writ large across the match reports for tonight's game, because, yeah, it's a huge step up for him, having played, one FA Cup game, a couple of League Cup games, to now find himself playing against Ajax, albeit at an empty Anfield, in the Champions League. It's a massive ask, and it's a game and it's a level that he's never played at before, as well as he's played for Liverpool youth teams, for Ireland under-21 sides in the past, and being in and around senior squads. He hasn't done it at this level yet. And we would hope that he's okay to step up to it.
That's true. To be fair as well, geez, we get up on our high horse about the pronunciation of Irish names. Can you imagine how much we butcher other countries' names? I mean, like Georgia against Ireland at the weekend. It's like no chance. No chance we're even remotely close. We are on our high horse about this pronunciation issue. And I think we need to get off it because we're no better. Imagine our efforts with some Eastern European teams.
I'm just admiring the Spanish people out there who might try and attempt to pronounce your name as Ho.
Well, Joe, is it really clear there has been progress under Pauw, wonders John in Cork. The Irish women's team now have the same type of manager the men's had for years, far too negative and defensive. I think she is trying to get them to play football. I think she is a
not true of all the fixtures, Joe. Like obviously tonight, the Republic of Ireland had to play in a way to try and stop Germany getting in behind them, but they went and pressed the issue, and particularly a lot of the home games, like when they beat Greece and when they beat Ukraine, they played on the front foot for the best part against Ukraine away from home too. The problem in Kiev was that they weren't converting that possession into meaningful chances. Mm. And like you're playing with effectively a number 10 in Denise O'Sullivan, who's one of the best ball players around. And under Vera Pauw, the idea has been to get the ball to McCabe and to O'Sullivan as much as possible. I don't think she's a defensive manager at all. I think unless you were just watching tonight, if I had any issue with Vera Pauw during the entire qualification campaign, I think I watched 7 of the matches. It was just how late it was to change things around in Kiev. I think it was a chance missed to wait to go into the last 6 or 7 minutes before springing changes on that Friday night. They probably should have been more proactive like they were tonight. Make a change around 55, 60 minutes and go to a different attacking system.
Okay, well, let's get started on the news round then. It is on Off the Ball and News Talk here with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Richie, where are you starting?
Yeah, at Tala, the Republic of Ireland, as we know, missing out on a European Championship playoff spot. Vera Pauw's side losing 3-1 to Germany at Tala Stadium. That the first goal the Germans had conceded in this whole qualification campaign. 8 matches in all in the prior 7 games. They scored 43 without reply. That result, coupled with a 2-1 win for Ukraine at home to 10-person Montenegro, means Ireland finished third in Group I behind Germany and then ultimately Ukraine finishing in second. As we mentioned, a point for Liverpool tonight at home to Ajax will be enough to secure them a last 16 spot in the Champions League. There is a first start in the competition for former Ringmahon Rangers goalkeeper Quirin Kelleher. He starts behind a back four of Nico Williams, Fabinho, Joel Matip and Andy Robertson. In midfield, it's captain Jordan Henderson, Jorginho Wijnaldum and Curtis Jones, with Sadio Mane, Mo Salah and Diogo Jota their front three. For Ajax, a 4-3-3 for them as well. Andre Onana starts in goal. Nusair Mazraoui, Per Schurrs, Dali Blind and Nicolas Tagliafico are their back four. Davy Klaassen, Edson Alvarez and Ryan Gravenberg are their midfield. And in midfield, it's Anthony, David Neres and Dusan Tadic. The other game in Group D tonight sees Atalanta entertain Midtjylland. Manchester City already have a last 16 place in the bag ahead of tonight's game away to Porto. Victory tonight will see them qualify as Group C winners with a game to spare. There was a 5:55 start to the Group B clash in Donetsk. Just going to have to bring it up on the phone because the laptop has decided not to play ball tonight. In the Group B clash, which is currently Shakhtar Donetsk 1, Real Madrid 0. It's Donetsk's Detinho getting the goal in that one. Borussia Mönchengladbach hosting Inter from 8, also underway at 5:55 in Moscow. In Group A, it's Lokomotiv 0, Salzburg 2. And at 8, Atletico Madrid host the champions, Bayern Munich.
Now, very interesting news from the Villa-Newcastle game. This really hasn't happened at all, I think, in the Premier League thus far.
Nope. The Premier League fixture between Aston Villa and Newcastle on Friday has been postponed because of a rise in coronavirus cases at the Tyneside club. Several Newcastle players are self-isolating at the moment after returning positive COVID-19 results in recent days. The club's training centre has also been temporarily closed down. And as you mentioned, Joe, it's the first English top flight game to have been cancelled since the resumption of the Premier League in the summer amidst the pandemic. They're hoping to rearrange that game and announce a date for it as soon as is possible. But a first game in the Premier League since Project Restart to be called off because of coronavirus cases, which in and of itself is a pretty good record.
Absolutely is. So when we hear that several Newcastle players are self-isolating, that would lead us to believe what we're talking, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, enough to get this game cancelled anyway. There's no specifics, are there?
No numbers. No, and no exact numbers forthcoming from Newcastle, but the Premier League put out a statement this afternoon saying they were informed by Steve Bruce's side that they didn't have enough players essentially to try and prepare for this game. And now that could be down to some being close contacts and they just were erring on the side of caution. We don't know how many exact positives are in the squad itself, if any. But there's enough cause for concern that enough players are isolating that they're not in a position to essentially fulfil the fixture on Friday, so they're going to try and rearrange it.
Okay. So Ireland at the weekend against Scotland.
Woohoo, we're all excited. Billy Burns ruled out of Saturday's final Autumn Nations Cup game against Scotland. He's got a groin injury. Will Connors, James Lowe and Ed Byrne will also be unavailable, but Jonathan Sexton and Robbie Henshaw are back training with the squad. Harry Byrne and Eric O'Sullivan will also train with Andy Farrell's squad this week. Sexton was in front of the media today saying that Ireland are not regressing, as some have suggested, under Andy Farrell.
No. Well, if you look at our results, We've lost, you know, twice to England away and we've lost to France away. We've won the rest of our games. Am I right in saying that? Yeah. So if you're talking about results, which is what Test Match Rugby is about, like if we can win on Saturday, you know, there's been plenty of Irish teams over the years that have lost in Twickenham and lost in France. And were they games we could have won? Maybe not the first England game, but the second one and the third one, the French one, we definitely feel like there's things that we did that got away from us. And there, England were in a World Cup final. They're probably one of the better teams in the world at the moment, and we need to get up to that level. So have we gone backwards? Well, not when you compare it to 2019. You know, if you go and compare it to 2018, obviously, you know, but we went backwards in 2019 from the same team went backwards. So we're like. We're just saying what we feel. I know you guys don't agree, but we feel like we're progressing and we need to show it. And that's where the gap in opinion is, really, is that we're doing some big learning, some great things in training, some bits in the games where you're talking about playing well against Wales at home. But again, in bits and pieces, we need to put out the 80-minute performance with the finishing touches, you know, because we feel and we can show you some video clips if you want of us creating lots of opportunities that we're just not finishing, and that's the big learning for us. You know, when there's opportunities at test level, you've got to take them, and when they're as clear cut as the ones that we're creating, we need to take them, and that's where we feel. You can disagree if you want, but that's where we are.
Very good. I mean, it's good when he comes out and speaks his mind a bit, because they're definitely taking a kicking on this show as much as anybody at the moment, you would have to say. I mean, certainly against Georgia, watching a bit of the game back again for my sins, there were numerous occasions where Ireland had overlaps and didn't take them. I don't know, is he talking about those examples as great opportunities that they're not finishing off? Because I'm not seeing many clear-cut chances being created, certainly not at Twickenham, and I do accept what he says about England being a really good team. I guess, Will, he's talking about it's a results business, and it is, but really that's not the reality what we're talking about here in rugby. You know, Ireland are aspiring to beat teams better than them, because they have done that in recent years and they're not doing it now. And also just the performances are worrying. Like, yeah, they beat Georgia, but I mean, in some respects, Will, the performance against Georgia is more worrying than the performance in Twickenham the week before.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, you were hoping for a certain amount of freshness, even when you looked at the selection last weekend, and you know, plenty of players were getting an opportunity to put their hand up for selection for the next Six Nations Championship. And you would hope against a team who were very poor in the rest of their pool games, particularly. It wasn't like Georgia were coming to Dublin on the back of having performed well in their other games. They hadn't. And then Ireland were just entirely unable to get any kind of expansive rugby going at all. And you start to wonder, is this a trend? Because the feeling was meant to be that Mike Catt would come in, there would be, you know, extra freedom for the backs to be able to move the ball around. And notwithstanding that Ireland had a midfield who, for the best part, were about physicality as opposed to creativity, and you were playing Billy Burns, who is still kind of finding his feet at out half for the 50-odd minutes that he played last week, Ireland created precious little. You couldn't really say that Ireland had the ball out wide a lot and just didn't take chances in that second half particularly. I think it was described last night by Brian O'Driscoll as one-dimensional. I think that's probably the fairest way to categorise the way Ireland have been playing. And even if you were to go back and look at the game against Scotland, was it now 8-9 months ago at this stage, if Stuart Hogg doesn't have an uncharacteristic moment where he switches his brain off, where he could have caught the ball and scored a try, Ireland would probably feel lucky that they got away with the result that day at the Aviva Stadium. And it's not like Ireland have really sparkled in any of the games since. We kind of gave an awful lot of slack at the start because it was in a new system and Andy Farrell had come in and we wanted to see small, subtle changes. Now, at this point, they've had a lot of games under this system and it still feels a hangover from 2019. I'm not sure if Johnny Sexton was to be totally honest, and obviously he's going to defend his teammates.
Yeah.
Are Ireland a whole lot better in 2020 than they were in 2019?
No, well, Brian and Keith last night, well worth a listen, and you'll get it on the OTB Sports app amongst other places. I asked them both if Ireland had improved in any areas this year and Keith said no. Brian said maybe defensively, although I heard Eddie O'Sullivan the other night on Against the Head saying that he thought Ireland's defence was ropey in a lot of instances. So bar the Welsh game at home, Six Nations, where there's been no real sign of encouragement. And that Welsh team, it turns out, are in crisis, you know, and they were in the early stages of crisis then as well. So. Like
the start
is,
of the French game, I would make the start of the French game, I'd make an argument for, because Ireland had thought actually came out of the blocks quite well during that game.
Yeah.
I think they were probably ground down by, you know, what everybody would agree was the better side on the night, and that's sometimes you just have to hold your hands up and say fair enough. I thought Brian's point last night was actually really interesting, that Ireland are on the cusp of making, and it kind of goes back to Sexton's point there, they're on the cusp of opening up opportunities for themselves, but for some reason they keep winding and walking themselves back into trouble and back into heavy trafficked areas, and there's no need for it. And that's a headspace thing that you can kind of, I guess, probably can be a little bit difficult to get out of. And as soon as they manage that, you would hope that things would be on the up and up. But you'd wonder, are these games the right place to do it now? Because we thought that Georgia would be the game that we'd blow off the cobwebs and go and put up a score of 30 or 40 plus points against the opposition. That didn't happen. There's now a sense of pressure on an Ireland side going into a nothing match in a nothing competition against Scotland this weekend. And like, that's not helping anybody either. So how do you judge this team coming off the back of this weekend? Like, if they go and actually put a score on Scotland, do you just say, ah, well, sure, look, at Scotland have no interest in this match no more than ourselves?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think if they put a good performance and a good score up against Scotland, then I think we have to say, well, Scotland are in a pretty good place at the moment. So that's very, very positive. And I think, you know, we have to be fair as well. Like, he has only had 8 games, and 2 of them were at Twickenham, and 1 was in Paris. So that is all there.
Nobody's, it's a mad year.
No, it's a terrible
year. It's a mad year.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's also a mad year for France, and they're doing just fine. But yes, it is a mad year.
There's a whole other bigger point. And Nusafora was asked about this actually the other day too, which is about the competitiveness of the Pro 14. And the IRFU, I'd imagine, are absolutely begging for these Super Rugby sides. Yeah. And touch wood, if they do come on board, that they do in a strong manner. Because the way that the Irish provinces are ploughing through the Pro 14 field at the moment is just, it's doing nobody any favours. The competition is suffering. The players are essentially getting game time at provincial level, and that's good to a degree, but the competition that it's offering up is just not there. And I think only Connacht have dropped points so far this season. I'm open to correction on that one.
Yeah, no,
but Munster,
true.
Leinster and Ulster have all got 100% records. They're running up bonus points for the crack. And that's just no preparation for international rugby at all.
It's not. When you hear things about Ross Byrne when he's trying to play at international level, that he's had no experience of playing under the cosh, I mean, that's just crazy. You know, it's damning. That was what was said about him against England. He's not used to playing under this kind of pressure. And like, so how can he perform at international level when that is the case?
He's in a very unusual situation at the moment as well, Joe, where everyone is kind of talking up his brother Harry at this point.
Yeah,
obviously he's
that's
now
awful, isn't it? Like, can you imagine? That is just, so Ross Byrne is getting, I genuinely feel sorry for Ross Byrne, because he's done lots of really good things, seems like a model pro, and, you know, from everywhere he has to hear that he's not the successor to Sexton. And worse still, people are saying, but his brother might be. And he's still having to go out and perform. I think that is really tough.
Yeah, and it creates an awkward situation too, because currently Ross Byrne for the Six Nations, in all likelihood, is the number two at this point, depending on what happens with Joey Carberry's injury. Jack Carthy seems to have fallen back to play for Connacht as opposed to being into Irish squads. So if Harry gets a chance, and I don't know, there's kind of talk maybe he could get onto the bench for this weekend, but he's definitely going to be running with the team for the rest of this week, and Andy Farrell's getting a chance to look at him. If Harry Byrne goes back to play for Leinster and ends up playing a little bit in Europe and maybe a bit of Pro 14 as backup to Sexton, is there a possibility that Ross Byrne may well miss out on the game time he was getting with Leinster last year, where you had Contepomi claiming that's where Ross Byrne has improved as a player, that his brother might be getting those minutes and sweeping them up when Sexton and his older brother Ross are away on international duty?
Yeah, potentially. Well, as you said, Richie, it is rather strange, but there is almost like a must-win feel, or certainly a must-perform very well feel about this Saturday, which is just so strange for this competition. Ultimately, end of the Six Nations after 14 games, when England are in Dublin on the 20th of March and the Six Nations 2021 is concluded, that's when you can give a very fair assessment of where Andy Farrell is. Nobody should be jumping the gun on this. And, do we want to become one of these countries that's jumping up and down calling for heads? But what we can say is that aside from Johnny Sexton just there and people in the camp, I haven't heard a single former player, pundit, journalist say that it's looking promising. That's what we can say.
Yeah, they'd be lying, that's why.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there's a text in here from, I'm guessing, Richie McCormick pretending to be Eugene. Joe, Richie's pronunciation of Eastern European names is excellent. I've spent the guts of 20 years working in those countries. Richie is a top interpreter, says Eugene, formerly of Belgrade, now of Trim. There you go, Richie. I read out your text.
That's worth all of the 30 cents that has just cost me off here.
So Lewis Hamilton has COVID.
He doesn't need. The Formula One world champion says he's devastated that he won't be able to race this weekend after testing positive for the virus. The Mercedes driver will miss this weekend's Sakhir Grand Prix in Bahrain as he's entered a 10-day period of isolation. It's the first time in his career that he's had to miss a race, and Hamilton has urged the public to continue to be careful, given that he caught COVID-19 despite F1's strict precautions at the moment. Celtic chief executive Peter Lowell has called for strength in adversity at the Parkhead Club. Hundreds of supporters protested outside the stadium on Sunday, demanding the sacking of manager Neil Lennon after just 2 wins in 10 matches. They'd just been beaten in the League Cup by Ross County. In a statement, Lowell says this evening that everyone in the Scottish Premiership club are more determined than ever to succeed, and he's given his backing to the beleaguered manager.
The sense was Lennon was in very serious trouble, so he's received the backing now. Those idiots outside the stadium, well, there's just not so much you can say about them. You know, they'll try and justify it and passion and all this nonsense, but it's actually just embarrassing.
Yeah. There's no positives to be said about that at all. Tom English was on, I think, Radio 5 talking about it there. Was it last night? And he's saying that the whole sense of 10 in a row has become like this pressure weighing down on the club that nobody seems to be in any great shakes to handle, be it the management, the players, or the fans. And the fans are particularly aggrieved because they can't get into stadiums to voice their frustrations. But the sense that they were going to walk to a 10th title is actually being challenged by Rangers at last from their point of view, seems to be a massive burden on everybody at that club. Mm. And how they're dealing with it doesn't seem to be all that well. But there has been a drop off in standards since Brendan Rodgers left. I don't think anybody can doubt that. I think last year was probably the last title that they were going to have, not unchallenged, but certainly winning in the manner that they did, which is slightly easier than they would have expected in previous decades. And this year is the first time in a long time that they've had a proper challenge from Rangers, and they're not really standing up all that well to it.
Well, I think
the frustration. Richie and Joe is going to say is that Rangers haven't exactly played brilliantly so far this season. They've kind of gone about their business reasonably well, and you look at Celtic's only defeat that they've had so far in the league was against Rangers, but they're dropping points all over the place against sides who they should be beating. You know, the argument could be made that the rest of the SPL has probably decreased in quality, and the concern you'd have if you were a Celtic supporter, and I think this is the main reason that they're looking for Neil Lennon to be replaced right now, is that there's that game in early January against Rangers, which probably has the ring around it in the calendar, which is that with Celtic's two games in hand, they have to be at least within one fixture potentially being flipped by the end of that Rangers game. If not, there's no way they're doing 10 in a row. So I can understand why they're calling for change now, despite the fact that the club seem to be ready to give Neil Lennon a bit of extra time. The reality is that the results over the next month are going to determine an awful lot about whether they can turn this around or not.
Yes, they've no wiggle room until that game on January 2nd. They're 11 points behind. They have two games in hand, so they need to be back at a minimum to within five of Rangers ahead of that January 2nd game. So Cavani then, he issued an apology and deleted his Instagram post, Rich.
Yeah, I think they're still trying to keep the FA at arm's length over this one. Manchester United boss Ole Gunnar Solskjaer says Edinson Cavani is extremely sorry for any offence caused by an Instagram post. He used a racially insensitive term, but then deleted it when it was explained that the word had a different meaning over there in the UK. Solskjaer has called for greater education for foreign players who come over to ply their trade in England.
Yeah, of course, we've communicated with Edinson, and he's really deeply sorry for the mistake he's made. There was no malicious intent at all. It was just an affectionate greeting to a friend of his, and but we explained to him. He's been asked by the FA to explain, so of course he'll cooperate with them, and we'll support him, because I think it is one of those unfortunate situations that he's just come into the country and. He's in Uruguay. It's been used in a different affection than what we have. So we'll support him. But of course, we support the FA. It's important that the FA have asked him to explain, and it's out there for everyone to see, because we want to be in the fight against discrimination with everyone.
Yeah, I think there has to be an allowance for unintentional mishaps once that's genuinely what's happened here, and you suspect it is. Otherwise, it's really worrying and strange behaviour on Cavani's part, and you suspect he'll repeat the offence, but I don't think that's the case in this instance. I don't know, did either of you see the Anton Ferdinand documentary last night?
No, missed it, but I heard enough about it, all right, yeah. Oof.
Ay, ay, ay. It's worth catching if you can. I recorded it last night. It was on BBC. So I'm sure there are ways and means of catching it, or it may be repeated. Effectively, Ferdinand's 35 now, and this incident at QPR happened in 2011, 9 years ago, and just the effect on him has been profound. You know, he's still not over it. He was chatting to a therapist about the guilt he feels. He's angry at himself and he feels guilty. He didn't speak out at the time. You know, he said nothing at the time, and he can't quite rationalise that to himself now. John Terry was found not guilty in a court of law, where there can't be any doubt whatsoever, any reasonable doubt whatsoever, which there was. But he was found guilty by the FA, where the burden of proof is lesser. And in the criminal court, the judge, in his written summation of the situation, said it was unlikely that what John Terry's explanation was the truth. But there was obviously a possibility that John Terry's explanation was the truth, so therefore it was a not guilty verdict. But you just get a sense of how Ferdinand struggled to grapple with it. Neil Warnock was his manager at the time. Warnock was interviewed by Ferdinand. Warnock said he wasn't the same person afterwards. He was in a bit of a daze. So it really did affect him and his career. He was very worried about Rio, obviously, and Rio's England career, and you know that how this might affect Rio if he spoke out. And interestingly, he sent John Terry an email as part of the documentary to say, well, it didn't show us exactly what he said, but in effect, you know, we probably have a few unresolved things here because they've never actually spoken. And John Terry declined the opportunity. I'm not surprised he didn't want to go on television and reopen this whole thing. So it was good.
The conversation that probably needs to happen in private between the two of them.
Yeah,
I think Terry's probably right to.
I did get that.
Demur the invitation if it's going to be on camera. But between the two of them, that's a conversation you would certainly, you know, even from our armchair view, would say needs to happen. But there has been a lot of talk leading from that documentary about how the FA in particular just pays lip service to these cases of racial abuse, and that's something that would need to be addressed. The support offered to the players via the PFA, and there have been huge problems of varying degrees with PFA down through the years, and we've heard it in the studio there as well from certain ex-pros that they don't do enough for the players themselves. You would hope that the supports are in place, not just from the likes of Kicking Out, but from the players' union themselves, that they aren't left they aren't just left out there on a limb by these situations, because they can be hugely mentally detrimental to the players involved.
Weirdly, it turns out, so they Kick It Out group were interviewed by Ferdinand. So he just felt so isolated, like his whole world just blew up, you know? And the Kick It Out people were saying that actually they're prohibited from talking to him during the investigation, which just seems like a crazy situation.
That's
He needs support. But what was interesting when you talk about the FA, and they will get a kicking out of this, is that Ferdinand recounted, and there was no recording of it, but he recounted his interview by the FA after the incident, you know? And Neil Warnock sat in on it with him, and Ferdinand felt like he was almost the guy on trial. It was so aggressive and so serious, to the point where Warnock remembers on the documentary saying, "Geez, is Anton the one on trial here?" And then they had a 4 minute snippet of Terry's interview by the FA. Geez, it was pretty chummy. It was all like, and so this incident started when the referee, when, you know, there was a free there, and I won't comment on the referee's performance there, John. You know, this kind of stuff. And Ferdinand had never heard it before. So just visibly livid about the thing.
Yeah, you'd probably be blown. You know? How was there no recording of Anton?
I mean, like, honestly, you'd swear 2011 was a different time, the way they're talking. I don't know. It's a crazy lack of protocol.
We forgot to press play and record at the same time.
Well, especially when you see the Everest Suarez case, where there was about a 300-page document that came out with a full transcript of every single piece of evidence that was given, you know, including the translator at the time, because the argument was that it was a cultural issue, and then the FA also had to consider intent because the two players had been niggling at each other.
Yeah.
Like, those incidents didn't take place all that long apart from each other. It's amazing to think there's so much documented evidence of what Everest Suarez and everyone around that said, and there seems to be a lack of recording of Anton Ferdinand.
It was odd because, now make sense of this, Ferdinand and the documentary makers put it to the FA that this seems a bit too chummy, you know, listening to it compared to my experience. And the FA said, oh, no, we like, it was a rigorous examination. We just don't have that part available to give you on recording. So, look, by the end of it, it didn't leave a nice taste, actually. And you looked at Ferdinand and you thought to yourself, this damaged his career, which is terrible thought, obviously. Fellas, we're right out of time and all that. Sorry. So, Richie McCormack, Will O'Callaghan, thanks a million.
Cheers, lads.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.